Two Guys Bike Shop had a signboard out front saying, "This weekend only, all campies 25% off list." A campagnolo would be just the right level of wretched excess. A caddy, but not a Rolls. I went past it a couple of blocks to a motel that was conveniently just behind a liquor store. A six-pack and a miniature of dark rum would take the kinks out fine. A burger and a couple of cookies for dinner from the 7-Eleven beside it. It wasn't dinner on the French Riviera with Duquest and his bevy of bimbos, but that might come in time. Chapter 9. He roasted a whole leg slowly, sawed in two to accommodate the oven, sealed up in heavy foil with herbs and spices and wine. After a few hours, timing by smell and touch, he used a long filleting knife to extract the bones for stock. He chunked the meat and browned it carefully under the broiler. He wolfed a quarter of it down and then rested for a day. He checked his garbage disposal map and dug a new hole for the cooked-out bones and burned her clothing on top of them, then relieved himself there before replacing the dirt and mat of humus and undergrowth. Three drops of butyric acid to keep away curious dogs and other digging animals. Prudence dictated that he ought to change his location soon. This little patch of Alabama was perfect, but that perfection was a danger. People looking for him would eventually close in and be on his doorstep by a process of elimination. Where next? The challenge of living in a city had a perverse appeal. The probability of detection would be high, though, almost certain. He was prepared to face and escape from a squad car or two of country bumpkin state troopers, but a city SWAT team would be formidable, and if he bested them, there would be a small army after him, federal as well as state. He couldn't afford to be tightly surrounded and observed in action. If they realized he wasn't human, they would want to capture him alive and find out what he was. His masters would not like that. He opened a third quart of Pabst Blue Ribbon and thought. Moving the trailer would be conspicuous and difficult. Burning it in place would be simple, but would draw investigators. If they found all the buried bones, there would be trouble. He was too physically conspicuous to hide among humans, but he could find another place like this. Maybe he should consider moving the trailer. It would be conspicuous on the road, but more conspicuous as a burned-out ruin. Fire inspectors might wonder why a hermit needed a big meat locker. If they checked it for DNA, they would find out. He considered burning on a monumental scale, a forest fire that incidentally consumed the trailer. That might not call attention to him if he planned it properly. It would be unthinkable to abandon this place before he had a destination. Not very difficult to find with time and resources. The past two homes he'd arranged through the same Atlanta firm, a rural acreage broker who only worked online. Hunter's Atlanta bank account was administered by computer and fueled by nighttime cash deposits. Cooper's purse had yielded an unexpected treasure, a roll of $50 bills sewn into the lining. He had handled them only while wearing gloves. There was no pattern to the serial numbers. They were an assortment of 5 bills that looked and smelled brand new, with 45 that had been in circulation. He crumpled them all up and soaked them in water with a little dirt and dried them between sheets of newspaper. It was interesting. Perhaps he should have talked to her longer. There was no way that money came from a regular paycheck, and details mattered. The more he knew about humans, the better his chance of eluding capture. How long had he been doing this? He remembered recent events in microscopic detail, but only back to his first Alabama victim, 6 years ago. He had evidently not been programmed to remember anything before that. In a plastic envelope, he had a birth certificate and a high school diploma, along with driver's licenses from 4 states, with the same picture but different names. He didn't remember acquiring those documents, though he knew how he might buy replacements. They must have been with him when his masters brought him to Earth, probably just before his detailed memories began. That had been in a run-down log cabin in a scrub pine swamp in Georgia. He had this old van and a cooler full of meat and a collection of fading memories, along with carefully sealed boxes of books and magazines. He knew the meat was human, but wasn't sure how he had come by it. A memory of a lot of blood and screams that stopped abruptly. From his aches, he could tell he had been driving a long time. That was all. He knew he wasn't human. Every human he'd seen was small and weak. He could deduce something of his heritage from the books and magazines, full of encoded references to his origin. The nature of his destiny, unclear, ambiguous. He probably would have to die to fulfill it. But he was not to die alone. Six. You got a new bike? She was trying to smile, but her expression had an element of wide-eyed incredulity. 2 new bikes the same month? Isn't it a beauty? I had rolled it up to her door, which she opened as I reached for the doorbell. But where's the old one? I mean the old new one. At a bike shop in Des Moines. I sort of traded it in. Sort of. What? It was 2 weeks old. This is sort of like a long test ride. I can take it back. 100 miles? I checked the cyclometer. 107.2. It is pretty, she admitted. Sleek and classic, deep red lacquer. How much? $1,000, minus a penny. Well, that was generous. How much you get for the old one? The old new one? $350. She pursed her lips and nodded. She probably thought that meant the total transaction had been $650. I didn't elaborate. It was $1,000 after the trade-in. A grand for a $1,350 bike was okay, even though a mathematical literalist like Kit might say it was actually $1,500, plus 2 weeks' use of an increasingly clunky commuter bike. The Campy was like gliding on glass. I was still totally in love, but I hadn't even had it long enough to add air to the tires. Can I try it? Sure, go ahead. She took it by the handlebars and looked down at the pedals and front chainring, then the rear gear cluster. There's no computer, I said. Yeah, I see. She frowned. I had one like this when I was a kid. No computer. Don't worry about shifting. No hills around here. I lowered the seat about an inch. Don't you need magnetic shoes? Works without 'em. She mounted the bike not too ungracefully and wobbled off. By the end of the block, she seemed to be in control. She turned around the corner and was gone just long enough for me to start worrying. Then she came flying back around the same corner and stopped right in front of me with a little chirp of rubber, smiling. "When you make your first million, buy me one?" "Half million," I said. "You approve?" "It's hardly like a bike at all. But why no computer shift?" "Well, it adds weight. I guess a pound or so. One more thing to go wrong. It doesn't take long to master the gears."
"Lots of levers," she said doubtfully.
"Only 5, really, and you didn't use the overdrive one until you were going 25 or 30 miles per hour." "I'll run you through them later. Tomorrow? I could use some air conditioning."
"Your place or here?"
"Air goes off at mine, but..." I took out my phone and punched the home utility number and turned it on. "It'll be cool in 30 minutes. Get some lunch at the mill?"
"Sure.
You put the bike on the car and I'll get my stuff."
"Spend the night?"
"Twist my arm."
"That would be different."
She went halfway down the walk and turned.
"I'm, a little indisposed."
"Probably the yeast thing again."
"That's okay. I love you for your mind."
"Sure you do.
Head, anyway."
Actually, her mind was working well. After lunch, we went back to my place, and she read the most recent chapter.
"So, is he really an alien? From where?"
"I'm glad you can't tell yet."
"But, like, do you know?"
I shook my head.
"What do you think?"
She topped off her tumbler of wine.
"Well, I have an unfair advantage. I do know the author."
"I hear you've slept with him."
"Not that well. He snores."
She riffled through the pages, mumbling,
"Alien, human. Alien, human."
She set the manuscript down and tapped it 3 times.
"I'm going to take a chance and say none of the above. Most of the rest of it I've read several times, and this new part doesn't change anything basic. He's neither fish nor fowl. You can't tell whether he's a nutjob who thinks he's an alien, or an alien who acts like a nutjob. True?"
I leaned back and smiled at her.
"So, are you a Cheshire cat or a Schrodinger one?"
I tried not to react to the good guess, but think my eyebrows shot up.
"It's not that mysterious. I remember the conversation. But I wonder what you're going to do with it. In real life, sooner or later, you open the box and the cat is either dead or alive."
"But a story isn't real life," I said. "I could leave the box closed."
"And the reader never finds out whether Hunter is an alien or not? I don't think your average reader is going to like that."
I shrugged. "Why should the reader know more about the story than I do?" Gun in the Box. 1. Kit never needed an alarm to get up early. I came half awake when she quietly got out of bed and dressed in the dark. I mumbled something, and she gave me a sleepy kiss and slipped out the front door.